You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The endless parade of time. Who can say what fruits the future will see ripen? We can only keep looking towards
tomorrow's world with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95BFM.
Hey, Earthlings!
I'm Isla Christensen.
And I'm Stella Huggins.
Welcome back to Tomorrow's World, the Wire segment where we look at big ideas of science and society.
And how it relates to the individual, as well as the wider society.
This week, we'll be talking about faking.
Didn't we already talk about imposter syndrome last week? I thought we established no one's faking and everyone's worthy of the success that they make for themselves.
No, Stella, faking. You know, fake bacon.
Oh, right, the vegan diet. You know, it seems like the new fad, but avoiding the flesh eating was first described in 500 BC by Pythagoras, the Greek philosopher and mathematician.
What a trendsetter.
He was a sustainable king. It's just a shame it didn't catch on sooner.
So, this week we're talking to Dr. Rosie Bosworth, who is involved with alternative protein and future foods, as an advisor about sustainable eating and vegan diets.
And there's a food truck load of information out there about what kind of foods are best for the environment, ranging from almond milk using more water than dairy milk does. And it's true that agriculture uses 70% of the globe's water supply. We asked Dr. Bosworth if, on balance, overall, all factors considered...
I mean, we're talking land use, water use, the ethics in production, the carbon in transmission, the emissions in livestock, even in the production. Is the vegan diet more sustainable?
It is, but it's also, I guess, just as a complicated answer as it is the question. Because when we look at vegan food, there are so many types of vegan food, especially new ones that are coming on the market. So at the moment, the public understands vegan food as being quote-unquote plant-based. However, what we're seeing is new technologies emerging on the market now, new biotechnologies that are coming on board to produce exactly the same molecules, enzymes, protein, flavours, lipids and all sorts that can actually be produced outside of the cow, even if you compared, I guess, cow milk with or dairy milk with, say, environmentally taxing almond milk, you'll still find across the value chain that almond milk is more beneficial from the environment point of view. But when we look at these new technologies, which I just referred to before as precision fermentation, they will be what we call exponentially more environmentally friendly.
So, veganism makes for a happier planet, confirmed.
But sustainable eating doesn't have to be strictly vegan.
Dr. Bosworth's 2020 TED Talk informs us that 1 gram of swab can be used in a lab to produce 10,000 kgs of beef. And we asked her how this process, called cellular agriculture, works.
We're taking a cell or a gene of an animal and we are proliferating it outside of the animal. We're then feeding it a feedstock, which will be primarily carbohydrate-based, using biomass. It could be sugars, it could be some sort of biomass byproduct from agricultural industry, and we don't need all of that energy source to produce other byproducts. Milk and meat is just a small byproduct of all of that energy.
And for those maybe not keen on eating lab-grown meat, there are a number of long-standing processes that manipulate soybeans to mimic the meat textures and tastes that already exist. Rosie helped us unpack those processes too.
Yeah, so heme or hemoglobin, it's not so much of a textural molecule process. That's more to give it the umami aroma. So it's to give it that smell, the meaty, kind of rich, meaty, umami smell and taste as we bite into it. And why that's important is that, and just for reference, when we're creating heme, for example, the Impossible Foods use heme in their plant-based burgers, and it's a molecule that's found in animals, or in cows, but you can actually harvest it and bio-ferment it, as I mentioned earlier, via fermentation using soy root nodules. It's got the same molecule found in that with that umami expression. Now, when we use it in plant-based burgers, it does help the average consumer consume it or have that same experience as they would as if they were eating a yummy burger with all that experiential sensory experience that we get from a burger that we don't typically get from tofu. Until those sensory experiences are matched, we're not going to see a mainstream shift over towards alternative proteins.
That's super interesting how you explain the experience of meat and maybe the consumer's choices. A point we wanted to bring up with you is the value action gap. So I know it for Stella and myself, we're super aware of the environmental effects, but that doesn't always mean that we're going to change our behaviours. And we think the same for many consumers, especially in New Zealand. We think lots of people are aware that there are these environmental effects, but they're not changing. Would you say then that biggest factor for the boundaries of swapping the diet is that cultural experience? Is it accessibility? Or as well, looking from a gendered perspective, men maybe are less likely to maybe go vegan as well?
A really great question. I think when we think about food, and I think all the top plant-based or new future food startups in the world, they don't consider themselves like food tech startups. They don't consider the front-running issue to be this new big food tech invention that they're doing. It's that they still consider themselves providers of tasty food and taste is key. Because if we don't like the taste, then the rest is just a waste of time.
Put simply, the value action gap is us humans going, I see what you mean, I know that it's bad, but it's yummy, I don't care.
Interesting. And actually, Rosie isn't a vegan herself, and she puts it down to what a lot of people describe as essentially wanting to eat what they know.
Alternatives don't always taste exactly the same as they used to for consumers, and this can be hugely off-putting for some people.
Exactly, like consider your favourite meal and now you've changed a huge part of it and it doesn't quite taste the same. We asked Rosie about the demographics for people who are more likely to go vegan.
Economic status, culture and social norms all play a huge role. And as per usual, we added a side serving of questions about toxic masculinity's role in saving the planet.
So that's from a taste and consumer experience point of view. I want my plant-based or my protein options to cook just as well in a curry. I want them to taste just as good as... give me the same experience, right? But right now they don't. So that's stopping me, even though I know the myriad of reasons why I should be eating it. That stops me from completely shifting towards a plant-based diet. And the second one, particularly in New Zealand, is price. When we look at, say, sub-bed meats, it's far more expensive to buy than, you know, chicken breast. So, you know, if we're looking at the younger generation who have that less, you know, elastic income, then that's going to be an issue. And then when we look at it from a male perspective, my time overseas, I certainly don't see men carrying away from plant-based proteins, but I certainly see it being more of a masculinity, you know, femininity, less so.
And Rosie is so excited about the future of STEM in the food industry.
Since I am talking to BFM, and, you know, if I had to have my time again at Auckland University, I would probably come back as a scientist or a biologist looking at molecular biology or a STEM, all those STEM subjects, science, technology, energy and maths, and go, but this is a multi-trillion dollar industry, future food, so it's going to blur the lines of food, cosmetics, pharma, nutraceuticals, and materials. These new technologies are going to encapsulate the world.
So Stella, I'm feeling pretty full. I think we've consumed enough food for thought today about sustainable eating and why it doesn't have to be so cut and dry.
So right. And even actively reducing your meat intake can play a huge role in reducing carbon emissions. And what you eat is definitely deemed sustainable based on where you are in relation to that food.
Absolutely. It's all contextual. And as the old saying goes, you are what you eat. Tune in next time for another episode. Stay critical, listeners.
And eat some good kai.
Looks like everything's going to be all right.
Tomorrow's World with Isla Christensen and Stella Huggins on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.